If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference,
this show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
We're an intentional community where people have moved because we're committed to wanting to live more ecological and more cooperative lifestyles.
In the early 1990s, environmentalist Lois Arkin had a vision for a sustainable living community long before people began talking about green living. Lois, who is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit Cooperative Resources and Service Project, was on hand at the 2015 Los Angeles Green Festival. We talked about the innovation she had created, with an update on its current status and a look towards the future. Lois, tell me please about what I see over here, Los Angeles Eco Village.
Yes, I live and work in the Los Angeles Eco Village. I actually founded it in 1993 on the ground in its current location in the north end of Koreatown in Los Angeles, or maybe more like 4 miles south of the observatory as the crow flies. So we're a sustainable community in process, which means that we're an intentional community where people have moved, about 40 of us now, to live there because we are committed to wanting to live more ecological and more cooperative lifestyles in a way that actually raises the quality of community life while at the same time lowering our environmental impact. And we're a very diverse community. There are so many things that happen there, just like in a regular village. There are small green businesses, there's co-op housing, we have a community land trust, we have a local currency, if you will. We grow a lot of food. We have also a food co-op where we have a bulk food buying club. So there's a lot of activities that go on. There's a lot of eco-technology. We have solar hot water. We have bees on our roof. We have some solar photovoltaic energy. We have a lot of gray water systems. And so all the kinds of things you would expect to find in an eco-village is what we do in a way that we demonstrate it. So people that live there constantly have public tours coming through our properties. We own about 50 units of housing around the intersection of our two streets. And that's just for starters the past 20 years. Our vision is to continue to develop the LA Eco Village in our two-block neighborhood. So we still have a long ways to go. But, you know, we haven't done too badly for 20 years.
Tell me the story of Los Angeles Eco Village. How did you come to decide to found it in 1993?
Well, I would say there's probably four different chapters to my life that led me to that period, this period. One is that I grew up in suburban Detroit, and there were a lot of fields around. There were a lot of relatives, friends, grandparents. We were always in and out of one another's homes. And I was always bringing animals home. There were four siblings in my family. My father was a home developer, I remember, and he was going to develop a new project not too far from where we were living in the suburbs that were, some of the roads were even unpaved at that time. And he was going to take some trees down. And my sister and I decided that Daddy was not going to take any trees down. So we laid down in front of the bulldozers long before it was fashionable. And my father was totally convinced, and he never took down any unnecessary trees after that in his 50-year career as a professional home builder. So we accomplished that. And then that was chapter one. Chapter two was in college. I was an anthropology major. And so that introduced me to people who were living sustainably all over the world, whose whole lifestyle, the whole living patterns were at great threat from accelerating development and loss of their lands. And I thought, oh my gosh, we really need to do what we can to help those people come into the 20th century without losing what it is that they have that we so desperately need, so much of their knowledge. And so I had some real passion for that sort of thing. And then I think the third chapter was when I was working in a small nonprofit organization, and my mentor there was passionate about cooperatives. And so I caught her passion and realized eventually I started a small organization called the Cooperative Resources and Services Project, or CRISP, C-R-S-P. And we eventually, within a very short time after I founded that organization, had an aha, we should create a small ecological cooperative neighborhood. And that became my passion for the next 10 years or so as we planned what that would be like. And so that brought us to being on the ground in 1993 in our own neighborhood. As a result, we had been planning new construction, large eco-village about 7 miles from where we are now. And then all of a sudden it was 1992 in LA, and our city went up in flames as a result of the Rodney King verdict. And I had lived in our current neighborhood then for 13 years. And it's an inner city neighborhood, but all the infrastructure was there. And so our planning committee just began to think, well, why don't we just do it in Lois's neighborhood instead of developing something brand new where we didn't have any infrastructure? So we just began it in 1993 and eventually bought our buildings. We own three buildings now, about 50 units of now permanently affordable housing. And so we essentially say that we're here to essentially integrate the social, the economic, and the ecological systems of our neighborhood in a way that, you know, raises the quality of life while lowering our environmental impacts and ultimately reinvents how we live in our city.
It occurs to me that you must have had some major hurdles to face, as land greedy and money greedy as people are, with affordable housing and with something that's geared towards people and their well-being as opposed to making a big profit.
Well, one of the things I've learned over the years is that a simple formula that I realized years after starting EcoVillage that I had followed, and it makes all of our dreams come true, and that is, if you have a very clear vision of what you want to do, and you have a plan and you have some flexibility built into your plan, and you persevere, or you stay grounded, thirdly, and you persevere, you will achieve, if you believe those four things, vision, planning, groundedness, and perseverance, you believe that strongly enough, you will accomplish whatever you want. And so we have in that respect. Yes, there have been hurdles here and there, but we always had wonderful relations with our local elected officials. We actually influenced public policy to include the concept of the eco-village into the city's housing element in the late, I think it was in the, it was in the late 1980s that we did that. So we were definitely ahead of our time. We produced a festival on eco-cities with the then Eco Home Network back in 1991. And we wrote a book on sustainable cities, concepts and strategies for eco-city development, or at least I co-edited that book and wrote some articles for it. So, you know, when you just kind of do all these things and you keep plugging away with a really positive attitude, I like to say at one point I was given an award for advocacy planning by the American Planning Association, and I didn't really know what that meant. And I went back to my table and I said to my colleague, so what does the word advocacy mean? I really didn't know in those days. And all of a sudden I realized, it means you have a big mouth. And so because I used to go, you know, I used to talk to anyone who would talk to me about these visions I was having about an ecological cooperative neighborhood that had a limited equity co-op and a community land trust and a local currency and appropriate technology and consensus decision making and all kinds of things that comprise an actual ecological urban village. But I, even before we had the word eco-village, I had all these other words, and people used to, you know, oh, what is that woman talking about? Get her away from me, you know, because I had such a big mouth about it all. But now I don't. I'm much more relaxed about it. And of course, so many things that no one was talking about then, sustainability, appropriate technology, cooperatives, land trusts, what kinds of things do we need to do to get beyond the speculative real estate market in terms of affordable housing? So that's a very big conversation in Los Angeles today, and we have a lot of ideas about that I hope to bring to some of the attention of some of our elected officials very soon now. And I think that, you know, we have the neighborhood councils now, and almost all the neighborhood councils now have a sustainability committee, and that's very, very encouraging. And so we have lots of opportunity to spread the word throughout the city in very, you know, where systems are set up for us to do that.
Before I have you give me a day in the life of Los Angeles Ecovillage, let's just pursue that for a moment. What is one practical step somebody needs to take? Let's say we have a listener who's listening in their 20s. They're told, well, your rent's going to be $2,500 a month. How do they get beyond the speculative real estate market to build a future as you have?
Well, I think the first thing you'd have to do is have a group of people that want to do something differently and that they share a vision. So you always want to get people that are kind of on the same page as you. And in our case, affordable housing is a bonus rather than a reason that we did what we did, but we knew that we had to have permanently affordable housing. But we didn't own any housing the first 3 years of starting Ecovillage. So we have a simple handout, the title of which is How to Start an Ecovillage in Your Neighborhood, 10 Easy Steps. Now, I often say, of course, it's kind of somewhat deceiving because it's not always real easy, but if you persevere and stay grounded, well, I should say it's easy, but it can be tedious. So the big thing, a first step that you may want to do if you live in an apartment building or on a block where there are other homes, what you may want to do is reach out to your neighbors and invite them to come and get together. Let's have a potluck breakfast some Saturday or Sunday morning and talk about what the issues are in our neighborhood besides lack of affordable housing. It may be you want to talk about what are the issues with air, soil, and water, our life support systems, which we cannot live without, and we're already living in very unhealthy ways in our city. What are the problems with our life support systems? What are the issues in our political jurisdiction? What do our local elected officials really care about that might be somewhat aligned with our own values? How is it that we get around? I mean, what are the three major causes of global climate change? You know, we know that a third of it comes from animal farming, a third of it comes from vehicles, a third of it comes from buildings. So if we look at that, and we look at ourselves, and who are we in relationship to those three major causes of climate change? And getting back to specifically to your question about affordable housing, I would say that if you're in an apartment building, the first thing you want to do is organize a tenant association so that you really are organized. You've got some kind of a legal entity that you can talk to your landlord about. And I believe that at some point, the city of Los Angeles will have a new ordinance that will give tenants and tenant organizations the first right of refusal for buying their apartment building. And that is going to be a very, very important first step. And I think that there are a number of other things, but the first thing is to get in community with your neighbors. If you live in a building where you want to have community and you don't really have it and you're not interested in meeting all your neighbors, there's a vacancy in your building, tell a friend about it and have a friend move in, and then at least there's a community of two of you.
So community and communication, I'm hearing, are the keys to making something like this a success.
Yeah, that is absolutely, totally important. And to have some common vision, some common core values, you've got to be on the same page. And then to establish what your core goals are. Do you have particular goals and measurable objectives? What is it we could do in the next 6 months or a year together? Could we start a community garden if you're in a rental apartment building and there's some land or even just concrete around? Could we start, if it's concrete, could we start a organic garden in barrels, you know, or in container, a container garden? Or could we talk with our landlord about, you know, actually starting something in the ground? Could we talk to our landlord about starting something on the roof? What is it that we could start? And how? And also, you want to figure out some way initially to work in cooperation with your landlord, even if you believe that they're very greedy and all they want to do is make more and more money, because they have children and oftentimes grandchildren also, and you may want to remind them about what kind of a planet do they want to leave for their children and grandchildren. And maybe they would like to have a place where their grandchildren could afford to live. And maybe there are some incredible tax benefits that a landlord might get by selling his or her building or their building to their tenants. These are all things that have to be explored. But over time, the first thing is that you've got to have a group of people that are in agreement with one another. They're good neighbors. They've worked on knowing one another well enough that they've built some trust. And they built trust and they have some common values and they have figured out how to resolve conflicts and how to make decisions together. These are all really, really important things. So it's not, doesn't always happen overnight, but we are gradually coming to a period in our lives, in civilizations everywhere, in societies everywhere, that we don't have much time to make changes. We have got to make changes that are very rapid and very deep. And 20 years ago, we said we had a 20-year window to save the planet. We don't have that window anymore. So we need to figure out how to change quickly and deeply.
With the thought of taking action in mind, what's your contact for that publication you were mentioning, The 10 Steps Towards Starting an Eco-Village?
Well, you can go to our website, www.laecovillage.org, LAECOVILLAGE, just like it sounds, LAECOVILLAGE.org. Under contact, you will find a way to contact us, and you can ask any question you want, and I will email you information.
LAECOVILLAGE.org. Let's spend an imaginary day, you and the listeners and I, if you have the time for this, in LA Eco Village. We come, it's morning, we just got up. What are we going to experience?
Well, what I'm going to actually suggest to your listeners out there is that we have 2.5-hour tours, and you can come and experience that kind of step by step.
How often are these tours, and how do people arrange them?
Yes, so you do have to have a reservation. You can go on our website, laecovillage.org, and find where the tours are and send us an email or a phone call. Usually there are tours twice a month, usually on Saturdays, but sometimes on Sundays. We also arrange special tours for groups that want to do group tours, whether they're college classes or high school classes or a group of planners from Australia. So we'll do special tours during the week. And that's about the size of things for us.
I'm curious what you said about your own currency. How does this work in LA Eco Village?
We have, there's a time bank, a network of time banks in the Los Angeles area. There are about a dozen now. You can find them on our website, or you can go to the website our.org. I believe that's I think that's the website, or you can click onto it from the laecovillage.org website. It's essentially a local currency that trades in time instead of dollars. And it's not a barter system per se, because any member can trade with anyone. You don't have to get something in order to spend something. No one, you know, everyone's encouraged to, you know, we might need someone to help in the garden. So they come for 2 hours, we pay them two time dollars. But maybe they don't need anything from us, but maybe they want to get some, maybe they want to help someone do a move. And so they'll, you know, all of these things are listed on the time bank notices that go out usually about once a week. Who's looking for what and who has what available?
As we wrap up here, Lois, what would you really love people to get from you, from Los Angeles Eco Village, about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Well, I think if you are familiar with the Green Festival and you have learned some things that you didn't know before, whether it's on in some way how to reduce your own ecological footprint, whether it means driving less, composting more, getting rid of plastic in your life, eating organic, whatever it is that you can do to lower your environmental footprint, that's going to help the planet. And I recommend you do it.
Lois, thank you for your time today.
Okay, thank you.
You and I have been listening to Lois Arkin, founder of the Los Angeles Eco Village Intentional Community and executive director at the nonprofit Cooperative Resources and Services Project Institute for Urban Eco Villages. If you'd like to know more about Los Angeles Eco Village or take one of their public tours, you'll find more information on laecovillage.org. That's laecovillage.org. You'll also find the resources Lois mentioned, in addition to the listings of classes they're offering, and information on EcoVillage initiatives and projects throughout the world. Once again, that's laecovillage.org. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. Over Coffee is a proud lynda.com affiliate. Please check out our website, twomaverix.com. On our resources page, you'll see our Over Coffee podcast link. Thank you for considering supporting us. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.